You're listening to the Fox and the Phoenix podcast, understanding the feminine cross-dressing experience.
I'm Savannah Hawk, dual gender male to female cross-dresser, LGBTQ plus advocate, TEDx speaker, and author of the Living with Cross-Dressing book series.
And I'm Julie Rubenstein, proud ally and co-founder of foxandhanger.com, a feminine styling and life coaching service for cross-dressers and transgender women.
Hi, Savannah.
Hi, Julie. What is that lovely, lovely background I see from you today?
Well, this is a built-in closet, my new built-in closet from my new, newly renovated, took 4 months, house.
Wow, yeah. It's impressive. And I want to tell the audience that when we started, you were positioned in the same spot with your closet behind you.
Yeah.
And there was a door that could really never close. And I remember that being like this thing you constantly try to manhandle it or womanhandle the door to try to get it closed or move it around. And I was talking to Judy the other day. And I said, you know, I know you're having this house run out and it's like taking you out of your comfort space for months and months and months. Right. And I'm like, I sure hope they fix that door, because I would hate for a whole house reno to exclude the fixing of the door.
I know. The door that was always off track and would be just like hanging on by a wheel on the track. It was very distracting. But yes, it's pretty fabulous.
It looks very cool. It's very like California closety. I don't know if people know what that is, where it's got built-in drawers and it's got upper and lower hanger rods. It looks very like modular and cool. Yeah, it looks very clean and lovely.
And you notice that I'm not the type of person that has color-coordinated boxes. I'm looking behind me and I have this action figure that my friend Hadara got me. Bitch crystals. Oh, let me read this. Hold on one second. Let me grab it. And she got me this present when I had no direction and I was not living at my house. It says, look, do you see it?
I do. Yes.
It says, it's still in the box as it should be. It has this plastic figurine with four little crystals. And it says, dark healing energy increases your power, not for the good girl. For bad bitches only.
All right.
I know, right? But then it says, collect the ball.
Oh, there's more? Holy crap.
There's more. There's Claire, Brenda. I don't know who this is. I can't pronounce this.
I don't know. I can't see it.
Anyway,
cool.
That makes me happy.
Lovely.
Yes. So yeah, that's me. I'm finally in my newly updated home. I definitely did not set my alarm clock because I thought, I'll wake up naturally. I just will. You know, I'm just the kind of person that just wakes up at 10 and that's good. You know, 44. Did that happen? No. Did I have a very intense dream that I had to follow through? Yes. So when I actually woke up at 11:11, our podcast scheduling anywhere from 11:15 to 11:30, I was like, oh, snap. And so luckily I was able to grab the beautiful card table. My husband and I put down a rug so it wouldn't scratch our newly stained floor.
Yeah.
So I was able to set up pretty quickly. But yeah, my eyes aren't completely open yet. And there are little bit of baby sleep sand in one of the corners of my left eye. But you know what? That doesn't affect my energy.
No.
Because I'm popping, my heart's open, I'm ready to go.
Nice. Ironically, in completely polar opposite of your day.
Yes.
Although I did wake up at 10, my time, which allowed me to finish the second round of edits of my book, the new Gender 101 book that will be out this spring. I have it set for May 1st. It may end up going to June 1st, only because I'm waiting for the Library of Congress number to come back, and it could be a 10-day process or a month process, so I don't want to get things loaded before that happens. In addition, by the time people hear this, I will have been at Keystone in Harrisburg and have come back. But yes. I was prepping my PowerPoint and updating it for this time around. So I spent time doing that. And we're doing a little bit of research on our topic today. But I want to keep it loosey-goosey because it can be a very serious topic. That being said, I don't really want to get really deep and depressed about it. But I thought what would be interesting, and you have mentioned this on episodes in years gone by,
Yes, yes.
Where we've spoken about what it's like to be a genetic female in the world, or at least in the Western culture world that we live in, and the juxtaposition of cross-dressing men trying to affect a feminine persona and pass in that way, and how, regardless of the presentation of our gender, you being a cis woman, me being a dual gender person, presenting as a woman sometimes, that I will never have the life experiences you will have or have had, or have had taught to you or indoctrinated to you or experienced. I don't know. It just came to mind that I think it's important to discuss, because a lot of times men dressing in women, while they can affect the feminine persona to perfection, let's say, I think there's still maybe a missing component of understanding of what females, women go through. And I thought it might be interesting to just touch on that topic a little bit today.
I think that sounds fabulous.
And you are fabulous.
Oh, stop.
I will not.
So before we start, I just want to ask our audience, and I've been thinking about saying this all week prior, so I'd like everyone who is listening to us right now to, whether you're driving or you're walking your dog or you're sitting with your significant other, however you take in our podcast at the moment, I'd like you to stop what you're doing or what you're thinking, and I'd like you to take just one deep cleansing breath. Breathe in and breathe out. And let's just do one more, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Breathe in and breathe out. Beautiful. And just know that whatever you're experiencing right now, whoever needs to hear this particular message, that it is going to be okay, and that how you're feeling now won't be forever, and that everything changes, and that you're loved and safe. And so we start our podcast with that kind, breathy mantra.
Lovely, lovely. As I was always taught, it was smell the flowers, blow out the candles.
Yes, I love that. Okay.
Sometimes I breathe in through my mouth and I'm like, that's not right. And then it makes me more anxious. So it's a whole thing.
So yeah, I think that this topic is definitely multi-layered and can be extremely triggering when it comes to comparing ourselves to each other as women, whether it be your CD or dual gender partner, back to yourself and your own experience, compare and contrast. And I think it's pretty known that the CD understands at some level that they will never understand what it's like to grow up as a biological woman. And in the same sense, the biological woman will never really know what it's like to be dual gender in the world, to be a crossdresser, to be dual gender and fighting for that place as a woman, fighting for that place as a transgender woman. Even. There's a lot of transphobia. There's a lot of comparing and contrasting between the trans community, in the gay community, in whatever community it is. So I think that this topic definitely has to be approached with some delicateness and some kindness. There are differences. And, you know, it often takes me on several different twists and turns, as my thought process tends to do. But I think we can all come to agreement that it's not the same. It is different.
No.
And yet there's this feeling among both parties as feeling less than, as fighting for your womanhood on some particular level.
Yes.
That there is connection there and there is vast differences based on a historical perspective, based on so many different perspectives that we're fighting for. Now, when it comes to, quote, feeling woman enough, we're talking about the crossdresser's perspective or someone who is dual gender or transgender, feeling woman enough. What does that mean? And it could mean so many different things. It could mean really working on your feminine presentation in a way that is very, I'll never be enough. I'll never be enough. No matter what I do, no matter how good I get at the craft, I will never be enough. Well, that concept of never being enough is very, very feminine. It is something that links both worlds for sure. Okay, cool. So I was wondering, Savannah, like what your thoughts are.
Yes, I'm coming at this from trying to be empathetic about what things I will never understand as a genetic man. for instance, if it gets situational, as a man, I've never really been overtly concerned about walking a dark corridor. I'm not saying I'm going down dark alleys like an idiot, but, you know, just going someplace, I have to get to my car and I'm going to go in a parking garage and make my way up to level 4. And I never think about that when I'm coming out of the airport and going to my car in lot C. As a man, I'm just like plugging along, got my luggage, doing my thing. And I don't put that much stock in my safety. Yes, I have some passing thoughts about it. Maybe I'm just a little more aware because I know I'm by myself and don't know what may occur. So I'm not completely oblivious of the fact, but I, as a man, do not think in those terms. Now, Savannah, because I may be approached or pursued or followed for different reasons, assuming that I'm not passable, they might want to do something to me because I'm trans. Or if I am passable, they may see me as a woman that is a little more defenseless or the quote unquote weaker sex, which is basically problematic to what we're talking about as well. But because I have a man's physique, I do tend to believe in myself that I can carry myself and handle myself in situations. Whereas you, and I would love to hear your take on this specific scenario, I don't think about my safety in those terms or to that depth. So if you were in a situation like walking out of the mall late at night, going to the parking garage, coming home from the airport, and you happen to have your car parked somewhere and you have to make your way to lot C, slot 47 by yourself, I mean, how do you carry yourself? How do you see yourself as a woman in those situations?
There's definitely a fear, a kind of animalistic fear that comes from any woman being alone at night, walking back to their car. There's a quickness to it. There's a fear, a PTSD fear that's kind of replaying in my mind. And as soon as I get to the car, I feel better. And I think that even if I had someone, sure, it might feel better. You may feel, you know, run as fast, or you may be lost in conversation. But I think for both female parties, there's definitely an awareness that we are in a parking lot at night trying to get to our car. So there's definitely a safety in number confidence, but there's definitely a speed in which we're walking. And we are both aware without even saying it. It's part of our DNA. It's part of our PTSD that we got to move quickly because this could happen, because the musculature of a man is just stronger. And their ability to take out one female is just as easy to take out two females. Being abducted, being sex trafficked, that feels extreme, but it is our reality. And at night, the parking lot of a mall or a bowling alley or wherever you are at night sets the scene for a lovely abduction or sex trafficking. We both know this without even having to say it. So it still is within us, even though women power, girl power. So there's still fear there. But what I'd like to do is, because I keep on, I'm hearing what you're saying, I'm hearing what I'm saying, and I really want to wrap in a bow this idea of the female perspective. From biological women's perspective, by playing the very famous, I don't know if you saw the Barbie movie.
I did not. I'm going to. I swear.
Okay. Well, America Ferrera has just been blown up for many reasons. Her star came years before this film, but she does a very iconic monologue that I like to play right now that will put things into perspective. And I think that it will create some real nice juice for us to talk about our topic in a higher level. And I'd love to play for you now.
All right.
Okay. Hopefully this all goes well.
It is literally impossible to be a woman. You are so beautiful and so smart. And it kills me that you don't think you're good enough. Like, we have to always be extraordinary. But somehow we're always doing it wrong. You have to be thin, but not too thin. And you can never say you want to be thin. You have to say you want to be healthy, but also you have to be thin. You have to have money, but you can't ask for money because that's crass. You have to be a boss, but you can't be mean. You have to lead, but you can't squash other people's ideas. You're supposed to love being a mother, but don't talk about your kids all the damn time. You have to be a career woman, but also always be looking out for other people. You have to answer for men's bad behavior, which is insane, but if you point that out, you're accused of complaining. You're supposed to stay pretty for men, but not so pretty that you tempt them too much or that you threaten other women, because you're supposed to be a part of the sisterhood, but always stand out and always be grateful. But never forget that the system is rigged, so find a way to acknowledge that, but also always be grateful. You have to never get old, never be rude, never show off, never be selfish, never fall down, never fail, never show fear, never get out of line. It's too hard. It's too contradictory. And nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. I'm just so tired of watching myself and every single other woman tie herself into knots so that people will like us. And if all of that is also true for a doll just representing a woman, then I don't even know.
So,
well, that brings up all sorts of things which I can't relate to. Everything that America Ferrera said, and she was so amazing on Ugly Betty, by the way. Mm-hmm. I watched that religiously. I loved her in that, because a lot of things she was saying in this, in Barbie, it was also subject matter from her being the quote unquote ugly assistant that nobody cared about, and yet she had to work 10 times harder to be seen like the attractive assistants. I don't have any touchstone about having to feel like I need to be extraordinary to be accepted like she does. But yet I do have to, we talk about this all the time. I always feel like my makeup has to be a 12 or a 15 to be like, feel like I am making extraordinary measures, or I am taking extraordinary measures in order to be just seen as female. So in that, I can definitely agree the idea, not like that inherent idea, but the idea of I do have to put this massive amount of effort in just to be average, let's say, and not, right. And not stand out, like stand up, but not stand out. Like I totally get that, because I feel all the time is that even if I'm elevating my game, I'm also don't want to stand out. I don't want to be extraordinary. I just want to be accepted. So taking these extraordinary measures to do that, I understand. And I totally understand the idea of, and again, not from a male perspective, but from an empathetic perspective of everything that women try to do that emulate how men act is always seen in negative context. If you stand up for yourself at work, you're being a bitch. If you're trying to be assertive, you're being a bitch. If you're trying to point out somebody's flaw, you're stepping out of line when it's not accepted. Like just in the workplace environments, all those things that women do, if they do it like a man does it, is never seen as confident and assertive. And a leader is always seen as griping or whining or bitching or something,
right.
And you have to do it in a very certain way so you don't like, you know, ruffle feathers. So I see it, I hear it. Women in same positions of power as men always seem, at least in my experience, always seem to come off not as golden because of the simple fact they're women.
Yeah, and this playing this I felt was important. It was not to shut the topic up and just be like, well, shit, what do we have in common? You know what I mean? I'll never experience that. But more to open up the dialogue and to have the conversation where if you're sitting there with your significant other who is a cis woman, there's an understanding in a very beautiful, very powerful way that is not to be like, well, I could never understand that, but it's just, it's information. It's complicated. Or when your cis partner says, you'll never truly understand. This is just a little artistic view into what she's saying, into all the complexities that come. Now, there's a lot of toxic traits that a lot of cross-dressing individuals are trying to obtain when it comes to their appearance, maybe, or when it comes to what they think is very female, claiming that kind of submissive way of being that women have been trying to undo for a very long time and trying to say, we're not that. So that's something that as I started this work, I really did notice is that there was a lot of kind of stereotypes. And I'm talking largely about presentation, but a lot of different stereotypes for my clients to feel, quote, like a woman, or listeners to feel like a woman, or just the idea that heels, if you don't have heels on, that's your tracker to determine how female you are. And that comes from a lot of brainwashing for all of us as a female collective, as someone who's sharing the female experience with us, you, me, a collective idea that women have to wear heels. That is the gold star of femininity, if you will. And as cross-dressing individuals coming into their, whether they're baby trans or whatever it is, as they start their kind of experience, they're collecting all the ideas and concepts that they've been shown falsely on television, in the media, all the ideas that they grew up with about what a woman is. And as a biological woman, I feel like things have progressed slowly in the 80s into the 90s. A sneaker came out, the flat. We've been on this revolutionary run, or this evolution. That's the word I was thinking of, this evolution of women's footwear being overtly feminine. Now I'm a biological woman. Judy's a biological woman. You have spoken about this a lot, that she just wakes up like this. Mm-hmm. You don't wake up like this. And yet wearing footwear that doesn't have longevity when it comes to the safety of your muscles and body, there's a panic there. And there's an idea, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that day will come where you won't be able to be wearing heels because you're at a certain age. Whether you choose to acknowledge that or choose to bury it down deep, there's that idea that is so connected to your femininity that without that one painful piece, whether you're, and your opinions of the kitten heel and how that will never be for you, there's an idea that Savannah kind of has a shelf life from how I perceive your fundamental beliefs around your cross-dressing opinion and what it means to be Savannah, which I hope at some point you're able to move past. Because you will always be dual gender, regardless of what you put on. And all of us women as a collective, I think, need to accept certain things when it comes to being female and aging. And I know it's really hard because it's part of the uniform, if you will.
Boo. So,
yes.
I say that about heels. And again, go back to episode 170 with me and Judy about heels and why. And yes, my heels have shortened. My stilettos have become wider. So I'm definitely seeing that and feeling that with age for sure. But yes, it is part of what you said, the uniform of what makes me feel feminine. And the other point you made, which is you and Judy and other cis females walk out the door as women. You walk out the door as women. You don't have to prove it to anybody that you're a woman. Whereas we, as assigned male at birth, dual gender, cross-dressing folk, have to prove it on the daily if we're not uber passable, if we're not able to just slide into that presentation so flawlessly because we have very slight effeminate features and it just works for us, we have to put the effort in. And so that's another difference in our presentations, whereas you have been told by Cosmopolitan magazine and In Style and all these things telling you how you should look to be feminine.
And our mothers and our grandmothers,
yes, and all television.
Right.
And yeah, whoever and everybody who's like in media and familial female influences are telling you, you need to do this in order to get a man or to be feminine. And why you don't want to be a tomboy. You need to look a certain way to attract the people you need to attract, let's say. So with that, absolutely, you have been taught to believe a very specific ideal for what the people around you and what have influenced you to be the most female, feminine you can be. And like you, us male and female crossdressers have also, I think, seen the same media, not had the familial influences, but we've seen the media, we see television, we see that long shot in a movie where they start off with these stiletto heels click-clacking down a long hallway, then coming up, panning out, seeing this beautiful tight skirt and slim figure in long hair of the lead female protagonist. And that's like very accepted and very powerful and very feminine. And all those things we've seen visually have influenced how we see ourselves or how we see how we should be. So yeah, I think in the very least, you and I have both had the same influences about what it means to be feminine. But yet I was also raised as a man, as a boy, told to be a certain way, told to provide for your family, at least in my era. So you provide, you go bring the money home, and it's the woman's job to be the domestic partner, to be the homemaker, to be the child raiser. And I was never taught that, although I have some kind of feminine energy to be helpful around the house and do some chores and try to be a full partner versus just the stereotypical division of labor type of thing. So I think in those ways, we are also different. Whereas you might have been raised to be taught, you need to be the homemaker. You need to be there for your husband, et cetera.
And the really interesting part is I don't cook. I do. Thanks, Trader Joe's. And anything that feels too stereotypically domestic or whatever, I make it my business to not take on some of those stereotypical things. For example, I have expectations of kind of a 50-50 parenting situation, which is very hip in my generation. But yeah, I definitely see the script of my women of the past, and I definitely have flipped it on its axis. And at the same time, there are certain expectations that I expect from my husband. First, I wouldn't expect if I married a woman, or if I married a woman and they were more masculine, than I'd expect, whether I said it or not, like they're the guy or, you know, whatever, but I would have certain expectations because that is what I know. It is the balance that I've created. It is within the choice catalog that I selected for me, right? So I could say I'm an independent woman and I do all these things, but at the same time, I very much adhere to that heteronormative way of being, for sure, right? But it's very interesting because we have this kind of patriarchal script that defines who we are as females, whether we are working so hard to fight against it, it's still there. And I think that when you have someone that feels as though they were never born a cis day in their life, right? If you have someone that comes in and was told that they, congratulations, it's a boy. But, you know, from the time that they remember, all they have seen in their eyes, in their mind, in their heart was female. And that comes with sensitivities, that comes with all of the things where they were never able to view themselves as male. And when they were put in anything that wasn't feminine growing up, if they were the child that would not wear the shorts or not wear the baseball hat, because it felt like acid on their skin. It just felt wrong. And they grow up and they realize that they identify as being a trans woman. They move through the world and they have all a lot prejudice that come towards them. And it's very, very hard. And they experience this whole experience. And then they come to a certain age where they learn about cross-dressers. And their friends decide to get super mad and have prejudice towards this group of individuals, this fringe culture that we have come to know and love. And they have this prejudice because they say, you know what? You can choose both. You could choose both. And we're mad because every day we fight to be seen and there's no jobs we could have. There's no, it creates this kind of laundry list of reasons for you as beautiful cross-dressing individuals to feel then not trans enough. Not trans enough. You're not woman enough. You're not trans enough. And so where do you belong? Well, hello, Fox and Phoenix podcast and the birth of us. And the reason why we said there needs to be a place where us, I will include myself in that, can come together and feel female enough, feel accepted in both our male part and our female part. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And that is the source. That is the area that we pull from and create love from and create history. And from the time that you and I started, there's a pandemic and now we're here. We're where we are today. And the world, as I see it, has shifted a little so that we're knowing that there's all types of different trans experiences, which is something that when you told me that when we first met, it didn't sit with my truth about what I was taught and who I chose to march with based on their trauma and their experience of being trans. So I know I said a lot there, but it does very much kind of capture why this topic is so important.
I agree. You did say a lot of things, and I'm going to try to recall that I thought were important. How, as a dual gender person, I fully have the ability to take advantage of all my male privilege and all the female privilege, all the good stuff, all the good female stuff, and not have to worry about women's suffrage, abortion banning, inequality in the workplace, all the things that women are still suffering through on the daily basis, I don't have to concern myself with because that doesn't speak to me because I really just have this feminine spirit that requires a physical presentation without all the hangups and adversity that a real woman has and is going through. So I think in a lot of ways, I feel an imposter in that way only because I will never know that suffering and that adversity that women go through on the daily. And I'm just taking advantage of all the pretty things and all the good things and all the things I want in life that like make me feel feminine without really ever knowing a full on feminine experience as a genetic woman. So I think that's important to say that I do recognize that as something that is a tangible complaint against us, as well as from the other end of the pool, like you said, the trans experience, where women of trans experience and transition experience, they have to live this 24/7. That's their choice. That's what they needed to do to exist in this world as a female or even as a man full time and have the additional adversity of being ostracized and not being genetically female enough for them. And then they look at us as if we're like just having a play date, like, oh, look at me, I'm doing dress up. And they look at us going, yeah, you're never going to understand my experience because you're just doing it as a costume, possibly. And then their experience also includes both, I'm living life 24/7 as a female. Now I'm looked at with the same inequality as women are. Plus, I have the trans experience of transition on top of that, which is another layer of ostracizing. So I get it. Our experiences are not all the same. And I understand that. And again, as a non-transitioning cross-dresser, I get it that I can be seen that way. And I'm just trying to put my best foot forward. And like we always talk about in this podcast, be empathetic to others and their experiences to know their complaint. Like I totally understand that the movement for gender-affirming care is marred by people pointing to us us meaning me and people like me and people who are non-transitioning or more fringe than the lawmakers are comfortable with, and using that as a mechanism to say we're all abominations. So gender-affirming care is just, you know, sterilization and castration and mutilation, and we should be to our children. So I get it, and I think I mentioned it. So again, I think it's all excuses by people who just don't want to see the truth of the matter for the people who need things the most. Yeah, it's a sad statement that we all have to be held to the same yardstick just because we want to do or need to do what's good and authentic for us. But those people who put blinders on to other people's adversities, I think, is also a poor way of going about life.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, struggling to feel enough, I feel confident with enough therapy and enough time where I could say that that feeling not enough is something that everyone experiences, I think, as Homo sapiens, as people. There are different levels of it, of course. But I hope that this episode today opens up the channels of communication to try to figure out how we are the same and cherish and honor the ways in which we are different. Because we can agree that there are things that connect us as women at different levels, and there are things that make us very, very different. For example, Judy has said in the past, and I have said to you in the past about you being sensitive. We forever want to do a Judy Julie episode together. And by the time it actually came to be, we had had several conversations with you, Savannah, about, you know, you're so sensitive. We're just worried of hurting your feelings and this and that. And, you know, are we undermining you? Does it sound like we're undermining you? Yes. But because you are a biological man, we suddenly feel the need to mention it. Where I'm sensitive, Judy's sensitive. Would we ever, in workshopping an idea for an episode together, would we ever say, well, I'm sensitive, so I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Or is it just is. It just is. And it must feel annoying to you to have be constantly reminded that you're sensitive, which you are sensitive. It's true. It's a true character's trait about you, but also so is my husband. You know, so is not a lot of men, because I don't know a lot of men, but I could say it is sensitive. But for an example, I couldn't really identify in a certain man I know very well that this person had anxiety. I couldn't. Because it felt like a very feminine thing to have. And it's so weird to me saying that out loud, because anxiety doesn't feel feminine or masculine in the day and age we live. If I saw that on paper, I wasn't like, oh, that's a girl problem. You know what I mean? But I viewed this person as being controlling, when really it just took someone saying, wow, they have a lot of anxiety, for me to suddenly see it as what it is, anxiety. So even when it comes to feelings and thoughts, which humans share feelings and thoughts, your enoughness around being able to experience that as every other woman experiences that, because women are people, just like you're a person, it's not as fluid. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I'm speaking to your experience with enough tenderness to really acknowledge the fact we're working on it. You know?
Yes. Yes, I am sensitive. And I always, every time you and Judy have brought up, but you're so sensitive. And it almost feels like my sensitivity was put on blast as a negative thing, as something.
A weakness.
Yes, absolutely. It's like every time you brought it, it's like, well, we don't want to say anything because you're so sensitive. And I'm like, and I didn't understand your point of view. Again, we're going off topic, kids, but I want to point this out because it was really a true double aha, right? Is that you were saying it in a way that I was taking as, well, you're weak in that way, therefore we can't say XYZ. And all the while, you and Judy were like, well, in reality, what we're trying to say is we care for you so much that we don't want to hurt your feelings. Yeah. So it's like both things are true, right? You've said it 100 times that both things can be true at the same time. So yes, I am sensitive.
Yeah.
Yes, I am sensitive. And you were trying to hold me in loving space about it. And really, I don't feel my sensitivity is a weakness, but yet I do see a lot of times me being rubbed the wrong way and bristled because I have my own triggers and my own anxiety and my own fears and worries and everything else that goes along with, like you said, being a human being, a homo sapien, and we're all just trying to get through life. So as you said, I hope this conversation, and we knew we were not going to get neck deep into it, but really more of a conversation of just opening up dialogue to understand that while we as men are trying to epitomize and idolize and present in a way that is our best female self, that in a lot of ways, genetic women still won't understand us and the reason why and what we're looking to get out of it. And just as much we as cross-dressing men will not understand the genetic female experience from almost like date of birth about how you've been raised and what you've seen in life experience and why your worldview is the way it is, because we weren't brought up in the same way. We hope that that has provided, I don't know, some clarity or some ideas for offline conversation.
Hear, hear. And know that my dad was also sensitive and he's dead. But since starting the podcast, I have thought about his sensitivity in a cross-dressing lens and thought he would make a great cross-dresser. Oh. So there's that too, darling. So with that said, thank you for sharing this time with us. A new episode comes out every Wednesday at the Fox and the Phoenix podcast. And please, please, please continue to share our episodes on your Facebook, talk about us behind our backs, and just continue to be kind to yourself, be kind to others. And yeah, don't forget to floss. Bye for now.
Until next time. You can find me on Facebook at Savannah Hawk or at Living With Crossdressing and on Instagram at Savannah Hawk. Remember, that's H-A-U-K. And to learn more, go to my website, livingwithcrossdressing.com.
And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Fox and Hanger or at Julie MTF Style, as well as on our website at foxandhanger.com.
Julie, it's your moment.
Fox and the Phoenix podcast uses Anchor, copyright 2024.
Yes, nailed it.
If you enjoy our content and want to make it easier for others to find us, please share with your friends. Tap the subscribe or follow button to the show wherever you're listening. Give it a 5-star rating or leave a review.
And for show ideas or comments, contact us through the podcast, on Facebook at Fox and Phoenix Podcast, or on Instagram at the Fox and the Phoenix Podcast _.